It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 22nd day of August 2019. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where we live. That is where you will find all your podcasting needs met. And it's also where you'll find the access to the chat room. I'm going to the chat room right now. And hopefully I'll be in there momentarily. Just go to headon.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and before you can even begin to imagine it, you will be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the times when this program is live from Monday through Friday to 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time and 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific. If you jump in this evening, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Kiazi and Otto and Squeaky and more to come. You'll be capably moderated this evening by midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, not the chosen one. Nope. Always last being picked for kickball and stuff like that. No. Oh, God. I guess we'll get into that. What the hell? No, everything's sending. Everything's recording. Let me check my messages here. Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa tells me hot on both thorny streams. So thank you for that. What's this? apparently, maybe it's just a matter of latency catching up. All switches are thrown, including the third one. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'm sorry, sometimes I get bogged down in technical details. But it looks like everything's running as it should. We shall find out presently. This program always begins with thanks. This program always begins with gratitude. And since I wasn't here yesterday, we have not only this evening's subscribers to thank, but yesterday's as well. And that's our friends at Shadow Mountain, Shadow Mountain Graphics, and Joan from Talibandiana yesterday. Today, Bill in Florida, Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of Southern California, Tirani, thank you. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very kindly indeed for being partial sponsors of the program and making all of this possible. Our fundraising goal is, we're downhill to tomorrow. This being Thursday, we've got a fundraising goal for today and tomorrow. And then if we meet all that, glory, hallelujah, we will have five glorious days of fundraising free radio next week. And so the fundraising goal stands at $500 to finish things up. It was $700, but a kind anonymous contributor knocked out a have a show on me. So that's magnificent because, $500 is easier than $7. Brother Deacon Asa says packets are passing merrily along. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thanks one and all for keeping the program on the air to everybody who contributes in whatever fashion you choose. That's how we keep non-commercial capitalism-free radio running. Okay? I hated not being here yesterday. Because, of course, we had the madness of the how do you even describe it? And me, a practitioner of the art of word knowing. The chosen one. Yeah. Kiss his hairy toe. God almighty. I would hazard a guess that Donald J. Trump is probably doing more for the bottom line of various beer, wine, and liquor companies than anybody since FDR and the end of Prohibition. Because how do you... Wow. Just... Yeah. It all starts with Wayne Allen Root, who was Jewish, but then decided there was probably a better dollar in becoming an evangelical. And so he started working that corner. They love him in Israel, he said of Trump, as though he was the king. And of course we know that Nitwit Nero would like to be a king. And so he jumped on that with both tiny feet. Tiny feet, tiny hands, tiny... Well, you know how it goes. And I was immediately reminded of the little church. As you head toward Cayford Mountain down some back roads through Kanawha County, there's a little church we saw once, Ferg and I. And they had their cross up outside the church, and they had their little sign on their little cross. But it wasn't apparently the most literate church in those parts, because they transposed a letter. Instead of saying I-N-R-I, it said Ernie, I-R-N-I. But nonetheless, traditionally, the story is that a sign was put above the cross that said I-R-N-I. It stood, the Romans were big with their abbreviations and so forth, so that's why they did that. It stood for Jesus Nazarenus Rex Judaicum. Latin, of course. Jesus of Nazareth. Actually, Jesus the Nazarene. King of the Jews. I expect any day that a sign will go up over the White House that says D-R-R-I, Donaldus Reaganorum Rex Judaicum, Donald of Queens, King of the Jews. Oh, no, says Darlene in Connecticut. Not Wayne Allen Root Rot. Yes, Wayne Allen Root Rot. D-R-R-I, Donaldus Reginarum Rex Judaicum. Now if we could just come up with the rest of the carpentry. But then again, if somebody brings him an insufficiently chilled Diet Coke, he feels like he's being crucified. Oy. Let's check in with Kyle down in Kentucky, Stan. Holy fucking shit, the GOP actually thinks the Second Coming and King of Israel, who thinks if you don't vote for Republicans as a Jew, you're a fucking traitor to your religion, that even he admits is complicated to figure out. Then again, those little Chinese finger cuff sleeves are complicated for Donald Trump to figure out. Yeah, that's right, a 79-cent party favor from Pier 1 Imports could cripple the current president of the United States. The GOP think he should buy fucking Greenland? By the way, that's the country that has, or at least had, all the ice. Don't tell the dumb fuck running the country that. This whole party is insane. Can you do a one-time invoking of the 25th Amendment and get all these fucking incompetent ass-kissing Nazis the fuck out of office? Well, you can only pull the 25th Amendment on a president, Kyle. That's all it applies to. Now, Kyle is apparently having a rough day. Kyle's typing in caps a lot. These people are fucking insane. It's not even about policy anymore. They don't know what the fuck they're supposed to even be doing. Sorry for yelling, but holy fuck, if you're not shitting your pants terrified yet, you're not paying attention. I tend to agree. And yesterday, while I was out on the road, I got a chance to listen to the evening news from National Petroleum Radio. And I heard one story, and I followed up on it when I got back because it was so, I'd say shocking, but not for this bunch. So disgusting, so nauseating, that I just wanted to make sure that my ears hadn't been lying to me. They hadn't. They are, the Trump regime. And, you know, we're one bad synapse away at this point from him just going full on Caligula and making a horse a member of the United States Senate. But then again, the Republican caucus is composed entirely of one turtle and a whole bunch of horses' asses, so it might be redundant. Pathetic attempt at humor. But they want to get rid of the Flores rule. The Flores rule is the rule that got them hauled into court a couple of months back, wherein a maggot lawyer argued that no, the federal government, while incarcerating children, had no obligation to provide them so much as a fucking toothbrush. That lawyer, a Christian lady, made the argument straight-faced, and the response of the court became almost immediately viral. So now, because of the Flores rule, naturally, the administration of Carotene Caligula wants to get rid of the Flores rule. And wait for it, wants the power to indefinitely keep children in their concentration camps. Because the Flores Agreement is nominally a rule that says you can't keep kids separated from their parents in custody for more than 20 days. And now, this gang of thugs, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, Klansmen, and assorted grifters, grafters, and con men and criminals. Well, 20 days isn't enough, and they just want to keep the children, you know, whatever, forever, if need be. I heard a new White House deputy assistant spokescreep being interviewed as I came up the road. Kid's last name was Kennedy, apparently from the bad line of Kennedys. Maybe he's related to that mushmouthed goober from Louisiana Stan. Wouldn't surprise me a damn bit. But, you know, it's a fairly common name, so maybe not. But he blamed the necessity for that rule on the immigration courts, saying that they were just too darn slow, and admitted they would like to keep the children indefinitely. What you have here is a backdoor, and why would anybody be surprised? This is a backdoor attempt at invitiating the 13th Amendment. If you hold children in concentration camps, almost from birth, then they're never going to, they won't, theoretically, they won't have any desire or know anything other than their non-freedom. So you are, in essence, raising up a class of helots, of fellahin, of chattel slaves. And then when their children are born in concentration camps, well, here on the 400th anniversary this week of the arrival of slavery in North America, we see Republicans trying to reconstitute it, doing what the Spanish first tried a little over 500 years ago. Cortez arrived in Tenochtitlan in 1519. It took the Spanish about 100 years to realize that los indios would rather die than live under the Spanish lash. And therein lie the origins of the importation of African slaves, which, while we talk about it in terms of its effect on the United, what would eventually become the United States, the vast proportion were compelled into South and Central America. The Spanish tried whipping, branding, beating, and mostly what the indigenous people did was die from the infectious diseases with which the Spaniards were simply crawling. But now, thanks to people like Stephen Miller and that creepy Kennedy dude who was speaking yesterday, I mean, look, complicity is complicity, whether you're a spokescreep or an architect of a policy. If we had a functioning global international justice system, the lot of them would stand in the dock and quite possibly then do the Spandau Ballet. But they're trying to create, and I give Agnes credit for this. She's been saying it all along. They are trying to create a new slave class. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least. Steve in New York says, I remember when Oprah referred to Obama as the one. Remember the hissy the fuckwads had? And she was being tongue-in-cheek. I know. I know. I remember Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, giggling his addict ass off about Barack the Magic Negro. Oh, yeah. I remember. And I remember how the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters shrieked and howled and had conniptions and referred to Barack Obama as you libtards messiah. But now, they're all quiet. And I have to wonder, over in Israel, they have something that resembles a free press. In some ways, the Israeli press is more vigorous than ours. And observant Jews can't be too pleased with someone being declared king over them, because they've got kind of a history. You know, folks like Saul and David and Solomon and Ahab and, and the thing is, to be, Israel didn't have, and remember, if you, and this is a little, we missed prayer meeting Wednesday, so it's okay for me to go down this road. If you know your Old Testament, if you were dipped by the heel in that stuff like I was as a child, you know that according to their holy book, the Almighty was perfectly happy with the system that he had set up with prophets like Samuel leading the children of Israel. But it was the children of Israel themselves who, looking at the cultures around them, said, "Hey, we don't have a king. Everybody else has a king. Why can't we have a king? Hey, God, can we have a king?" And they pestered the Almighty so long that he finally said, "Listen, this is not going to be a good idea, but sure, fine. Here, take Saul." And Saul toddles along as the first king of Israel for a while. But he's kind of a pissy fella, and he's jealous. And his son, his anointed heir, Jonathan. Well, Jonathan was probably a little gay. And Jonathan developed this thing for a shepherd boy named Dave. And Dave was good with a slingshot. And Dave had the good luck of killing a Philistine warrior, termed in the Old Testament to be a giant, which means he was probably about 5'11 for those days and times and places. Well, David loved Jonathan as his own soul, and Jonathan loved David as his own soul. And you get the idea, they loved a lot of other parts of themselves besides souls. And David got to be kind of popular in Israel of old. And Saul recognized this and realized that his idea of building a dynasty was fading quickly. Jonathan was looking less and less kingly. And remember, of course, we're in a time when everybody there was wearing a dress. And so Saul goes after David. David eventually defeats Saul. David becomes king of Israel, has 600 wives and 400 concubines. I mean, I don't know what the number is, but so much for one man and one woman being a good, God-fearing, upstanding marriage. And he has a bunch of kids, and one of them winds up going to the throne by the name of Solomon. And David got in it bad with God, got in bad with God after being beloved of God. And the same thing happens. Until eventually, the kingdom of Israel gets split in twain. And you get a kingdom of Israel and a kingdom of Judah. And all those kings of Israel pretty much turned out to be shitbirds. And thus was the Almighty proven correct. Because, you know, he does things like that. He punks his chosen people from time to time in that book. The tribes of Israel eventually get lost. And like I said, in Israel, they probably know these stories a lot better than I do. And so when Donald Trump starts getting called the King of Israel, one, that probably... You know, if you fired him up with sodium pentothal and strapped him to a chair and threatened him with a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, Psycho Bibi would probably let loose with a string of dirty words that could be heard on Norblap 9 at the idea of Donald Trump being king of Israel. And the Orthodox must be having a shit hemorrhage. But over here, it's just another day of crazy old Donnie. Meanwhile, David in South Carolina, Stan notes, good God, Mark Tango Sanford, Mark Appalachian Trail Sanford, is hearing voices and seeing flashing green lights. It is Woodstock Anniversary Week. Groovy. Oh, I love a good use of the word groovy. You got a cowbell for... Yeah, David gets a cowbell for his grooviness. Billable Rick is asking for some advice. Is it safe? Is it safe? I wanted to run this by the Horn community. I purchased last-minute tickets to see the Rolling Stones tonight at the Rose Bowl as part of their No Filter tour with the lovely star and my son. My seats are 14 rows up across the field from the stage in what I would characterize as the 7 o'clock position. Is that far enough from the stage to render Mick and his heart stent safe from my powers? Just asking for a friend. Don't want there to be another petty tragedy. Rock on. P.S. I hope that Tracy and Jan are having a blast watching Cher in Vegas. Yeah, I got a note from Tracy earlier that they were hot-footing it to Vegas to see Cher this evening. I told her by all means to break the house while she was there. That'll be a good show. Rick, as far as the Stones are concerned, I mean, even your powers, and they are Mickle. Your powers can't touch Keith Richards. In fact, you may come out of there looking older than you actually are as he draws life force from you. Mick, though? Those contracts have a hell of a lot of medical riders in them, so I'm assuming that he's been cleared by no less than 4 or 5 cardiologists and the Pope and the Dalai Lama, possibly even Jimmy Carter, to do the shows. So, you know, just don't try not to look at him on stage. Just watch the Jumbotron, okay? Dave from Talibandiano with a note. Holy shit, man. I better stock up on nails and hammers and put in an order. The Rugged Number 7 are best-selling cross to date. Yes, the Trumpanzees will want to follow their Führer and carry their own beloved Rugged Number 7s up to a hill near them. In the name of God, why do they want me to work so hard? My crew will be doing this for weeks. By the way, we'll be hiring soon. Your friend Dave from the Blind. P.S. Discounts normally given the Republicans are canceled now that they have the second coming of stupidity. So, Bowser. Good luck with all that, Dave. And hey, this just in from Charlene in Rogues Island, a charter member of the Sorority of Leans and an original founding member of Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society. Charlene says, I'm going to offer up a $200 challenge, and if it's met tonight, I'll add $100, and that will clean up fundraising for the month of August. So there's a $200 challenge on the table, courtesy of Charlene. If it's met in the next 2.5 hours, it can't go overnight. If it's met in the next 2.5 hours, Charlene adds another 100, and we are done for the month of August. And we don't get 5 days of fundraising free radio. We get 6. Can we do it? Thank you, Charlene. Thank you. I sincerely hope your offer is taken with the kindness that it is offered. So the clock's on. We've got 2.5 hours to knock out $200. That's 10 people at 20 or 20 people at 10, and then we're done. Oh, speaking of concerts, Dave in South Carolina Stan says, I've got front row seats for Steve Earle on Tuesday night. Cheers. That will be a hell of a show. Yes, it will. Going back to Keith Richards for a moment, Ron in Raleigh says, yeah, I'm thinking Keith has a portrait in his attic that really looks bad. They've all made a pact with the devil. Oh, wow. I mean, I remember way back in the 70s being constantly harangued by various and sundry Baptist ministers that, in fact, they were satanic. I mean, you know, they made an album, Satanic Majesty's Request, and sang a song called Sympathy for the Devil. But, yes. The funny thing is, though, wouldn't the poor, in Keith Richards' case, if you think about young Keith Richards versus current Keith Richards, wouldn't the portrait be getting more handsome? Because once upon a time, Keith Richards just looked like a normal, everyday, rather handsome little lad from, you know, from merry old England. Right. By the way, speaking of the comparison of the press, say, between the U.S. and Israel, Randy in PA points out, the free press in the U.S. now ranked at number 45 country-wise as of May 2019. I can just see all the USA, USA crowd yelling, we're number 45, we're number 45. Well, we're 45 for 45. Dolt 45. See how it works? Thank you, Otto. Otto gets us started on Charlene's challenge. There's only $185 to go of it now. Otto has opened the door. Hopefully many more will follow through it. Now, I mentioned the Julius Geezer regime wanting to keep children in concentration camps indefinitely. I mentioned that so early in the program because of something else that hit the wires today. Via BuzzFeed News, an email sent from the Justice Department, that would be Bill Barr's Justice Department, so you know this ain't going to end well because it involves Bill Barr. Yes, Flavio, Keith Richards as Dorian Gray, precisely. An email sent from the Justice Department to all Immigration Court employees this week included a link to an article, all Immigration Court employees, that's judges all the way down to, you know, all the support personnel and whatnot. An email sent from the Justice Department to all Immigration Court employees this week included a link to an article posted on a white nationalist website, that, quote, directly attacks sitting immigration judges with racial and ethnically tinged slurs. Well, imagine that. That quote, directly attacks sitting immigration judges with racial and ethnically tinged slurs, is a quote from a letter that was sent by a union for the immigration judges and which BuzzFeed News got its hands on. The name of the union is the National Association of Immigration Judges. The email came from the Justice Department's Executive Office for Immigration Review. The link they sent out was from The Dare. The Dare is a white nationalist, white supremacist, you know, maggot website. And it contained, the link the blog post did, what are described as anti-Semitic attacks on judges. Anti-Semitic attacks on judges. Well, imagine that. Anybody surprised? Right. BuzzFeed did the necessary journalistic due diligence. They checked the link. And they discovered that what was complained of in the letter is in fact true. It went out Monday. And it had to do with, among other things, the Justice Department trying to decertify the Immigration Judges Union. Anyone who's a member of a union knows what decertification is about. It's when the employer comes around and says, oh, we don't think this union really does represent all the people it claims to represent. We probably need to decertify it and take those people's union rights away. Ashley Tabador is the head of that union. And in the letter, Ashley Tabador said, the post features links and content that directly attacks sitting immigration judges with racial and ethnically tinged slurs and the label CRITARCH. K-R-I-T-A-R-C-H. The reference to Kritark in a negative tone is deeply offensive and anti-Semitic. The VDare post includes pictures of judges with the term Kritark preceding their names. Now, where's that word come from? I don't just do things here. There's a reason I was talking about Samuel and the rise of the kingship in Israel. At one point in time, the children of Israel were ruled by judges. That's why there's a book called, oddly enough, in the Old Testament, Judges. And the Kritarchy, and of course I don't think that's a Hebrew reference. It probably comes from the Septuagint Old Testament, which is written in Greek. It's what Israel was during the time of the judges. Ms. Tabador continued and said, V-Dare's use of the term in a pejorative manner casts Jewish history in a negative light as an anti-Semitic trope of Jews seeking power and control. You got to give it to these little neo-Nazis and Nazi wannabes, fascists. They have a real fetish, I guess is the word, for what I can only describe as arcana. The Germans were like that, too. Raiders of the Lost Ark story was fictitious, but its basis that the Nazis sent out people to try to find secret knowledge is very much true. So, and it's all tied in with the concept of Aryan-ness. And so it's no surprise to me that they would dig up an ancient word like Kritark, which I confess never having seen before. Is not surprising. She continued, Ashley Tabador did, publication and dissemination of a white supremacist anti-Semitic website throughout the EOIR is antithetical to the goals and ideals of the Department of Justice. EOIR should take all appropriate safety and security measures for all judges, given the tone and tenor of this posting. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice, a spokescreep there, and immediately went into full weasel mode and said,
the daily EOIR morning news briefings are compiled by a contractor and the blog post should not have been included.
That was Assistant Press Secretary Catherine Mattingly.
The Department of Justice condemns anti-Semitism in the strongest terms.
One former senior DOJ official said that email was generated by a third-party vendor that utilizes keyword searches to produce news clippings for staff. It is not reviewed or approved by staff before it is transmitted.
Well, whose fault is that?
Oh, oopsie, we just let some Nazi propaganda slip through into your official email from the Department of Justice to the EOIR. Yeah. Some accident. Some accident indeed. Anybody actually believe that was an accident? Yeah, it's about as accidental as this disgusting regime declaring that it wants to hold children in concentration camps in perpetuity. No accident at all. Now, this story is about, 6 days old. And it ties in. And right, every immigration judge has been put at hazard by these Nazis. Oh, we found it by a keyword search? What keyword were you looking for? Nazi? A fascist regime puts out an email linked to a white supremacist website. I did not see that coming. Did not see that coming. Nazi. Darlene tells me the program keeps dropping out. I've tried HeadOn.live and now White Rose Society. Maybe it's on my end, but I thought I'd mention it. Let me know if you all are having the... When I saw that, I sent a note to Brother Deacon Asa to see if he was seeing anything. I'm not getting any buffering or anything. Ron and Raleigh says, these news clips brought to you by the Thule Society. Interesting, though, that 5 or 6 days ago, the American Bar Association stated that judges are more and more often coming under threat in the current era in which we find ourselves, the nightmare from which we seem unable to awaken. The post was generated by the American Bar Association after they had their annual meeting in San Francisco last week. And there was a panel discussion on the efforts being made by the right wing to undermine the courts. The panel consisted of 6 judges, all of whom agreed on the following statement, quote, attacks on the judiciary are becoming more common. We are not as wed to the rule of law as we would like to think we are. The consequence of that is what we are seeing now. That was from Ohio Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. Judge James Robart, a U.S. District Judge in Seattle, recalled when Trump called him a so-called judge after he blocked the first Muslim ban. Trump went on to say, I just cannot believe a judge would put our country in such peril. If something happens, blame him and court system, people pouring in bad. Robart got more than 42,000 angry maggot phone calls, letters, and emails. The marshals who went through them said that 1,100 of those were serious threats. Of the 1,100, 100 were outright death threats. Speaking on the panel, Judge Robart said, here's the President of the United States saying this person's not a judge, implying you can disregard his ruling and saying these people are flooding into the country to rape your wife, rape your children, and it's all his fault. I think that crosses a line from legitimate criticism of a ruling and goes to a whole different area. Well, yeah. What he's trying to do and what he's been trying to do since even before the election of 2016 is to delegitimize the judicial process. I suspect, and this is merely theory, but I suspect it is because he expects eventually to find himself engaged by that judicial system. And like any petty pissant dictator, he will scream that the game was rigged against him. So-called judge. Right. And eventually, because it's happened before, the maggots will start taking a shot or two at him. I don't say that because I want them to. I say that because it's happened before and it will happen again. Because something nasty has been unleashed in our body politic. It didn't start with Trump. It goes further back than that. But the same people who support Trump are the same people who are sovereign citizens and militiamen and, you know, that ilk. Washington Supreme Court Justice Deborah Stevens said on the same panel, "These very personal and sometimes terrifying attacks are having an effect. You can't do things the way we've always done, with our lips sealed and just talking in platitudes. We have to take more aggressive action." You know who's not worried? The maggot judges that have been crammed into the court since January the 20th, 2017. Because they're lickspittles. They'll just go on, go along, and do the fascist bidding of the venereal Vespasian, and they will be and they have already been rewarded with lifetime tenure for their willingness to do it. Thanks, Federalist Society. Thanks so much. Thanks. Got a couple of emails. Dave says no issues with the stream. Our buddy Don in West Tennistan says loud and clear on headon.live. Thanks. Thanks, guys. And emailing at almost the same time I was saying it, Flavio says McConnell's already stacking the courts with Federalist Society judges. Just imagine what it'll look like if that continues past January the 20th, 2021. Just imagine. And you know what? It may. No matter how awful he is, I think we do ourselves a real disservice if we simply tell ourselves, "Wow, I mean, America's not that bad." Shit, come on. George W. Bush got a second term, sort of. You think it can't happen again? Sure it can. And based on something I'm seeing lately, the likelihood is ramping up. And I think it's necessary that we go ahead and talk about this, because it's dangerous, it's frightening, and it is utterly unnecessary. Thank you, Randy. Randy says loud and clear on headon.live. you know, this, Darlene, what you may be hearing is Dropout. I don't have any fine control over it, but the road rig here has a noise gate and some compression on it. The noise gate may be occasionally making it sound like it's dropping out. That's a possibility. No, I've noticed over on social media lately that the Mean Girls are having a spat. It's apparently Zerlina Maxwell versus Susan Sarandon. And they're each sitting there picking at each other's 2016 scabs. Zerlina Maxwell was at Netroots Nation back in July in Philly. Chris from Germany went and sat in on a panel she was on and came out utterly nauseated. Zerlina Maxwell is a hardcore hilarian. Susan Sarandon, of course, is a hardcore burner. And I, for one, have never thought much of true believers of any stripe, because that means you have elevated politics into the realm of soap opera, professional wrestling, and cults. I don't think that's the best way. I don't think politics is best practiced that way. But Zerlina, who now runs, I guess she's the program director for Sirius's Progress Channel or whatever. She has no background in radio or broadcasting, but she was director of progressive media for Hillary Clinton. Well, good for her. But she's been promoted to run a broadcast operation when she probably doesn't know which button to push to make the mic come on. It would be like making me a cruise ship captain because we do a program once a week called Titanic Tuesday. And Susan Sarandon is, of course, Susan Sarandon. You remember Susan Sarandon, the woman who said that Trump's presidency would be good for us because it would bring us the revolution. But they're both true believers of the absolute worst type. They, by God, know they're right. And nobody's ever, no fact, no nothing is ever going to convince them otherwise. And so they have once again reduced American politics to the level of a seventh grade Mean Girl spat. And here we are. I'm not taking a side in it. I'm going to be better than that, smarter than that. Because unlike Zerlina Maxwell and unlike Susan Sarandon, I know the problem is Donald Trump, not something that was said three fucking years ago. Our country cannot survive another 4 years of Donald Trump. we will have a hell of a time just cleaning up the mess if we can get rid of him on January 20th, 2021. The list of shit to fix is probably already longer than any president can do in 4 years. But we won't have to worry about that if the Zerlinas and the Susans get their way. They'll just keep picking at each other's scabs until we're sitting there thinking that the American Carnage inaugural speech was damned well a Shakespearean sonnet compared to the madness that'll come burbling out of his mouth on January 20th, 2021. Yeah. The problem is Donald Trump. The job, the mission, is getting rid of Donald Trump by defeating him. Good luck getting that across to the hardcore scab pickers. Darlene says, okay, thank you and the listeners. It's been steady for a few minutes. P.S. Deborah Messing is calling Susan Sarandon out left and right, telling her to shut the fuck up. If I didn't know any better, I'd say that Deborah's listening to your show. Hi, Deborah. Love her. She's pushing the idea to vote blue no matter who. Deborah gets it. I will vote for an old yeller dog if they are the Democratic nominee. And if we don't all adopt that position, we're going to get us the end of our country. And maybe the end of human life on Earth. We're a hard species to kill. We've been down at one point in time to 2,000 or less members of our species. Given the billions on our planet now, I'd say we bounced back pretty well. Or at least enthusiastically. But the world is a vastly different place than it was at that point in time. So, Bob, stop telling us how not to behave like it's seventh grade. I know. There's plenty to be infuriated about. There's plenty to be heartbroken about. There's plenty to be terrified about. Nothing gets any better with these seventh grade slap fights. Even if we get rid of Trump, says Flavio, cleaning up the mess will make the Augean stables look like a cakewalk. Oh, yeah. It's the punchline to that old joke that says, coffee breaks over, back on your heads. So, I've seen it all over social media. I am sick to death of it. And all I think the only rational response is to look at both sides and say, shut the fuck up. You commit to voting for the nominee, whomever the nominee is. I guess by now we're hardening into our little camps, and we know who we want. I'm still not there. You know why I'm not there? Because it doesn't matter. I get a primary vote in May of 2020. May. By the time my vote comes around, most of the people that are in this race right now will be gone. And so my choices will have been made for me by people in South Carolina and New Hampshire, Nevada, and Iowa. Don't know them from Adam's house cat, but they get to effectively take my vote away from me because I don't get a primary vote until 4 months after they get theirs. And in terms of our politics and the vast amounts of money required to fuel it, that is an eternity. One of the candidates that I respected more than many others, Jay Inslee, is officially out of the race. He couldn't get traction. Despite the fact that he had more executive experience, more experience running a progressive state on a progressive agenda and making Washington an economic powerhouse and at the same time battling the climate crisis. Nah, see ya, Jay. So he's going to want run for a third term as Washington's governor. I hope he gets it. But he probably wouldn't have been there on my ballot in May anyway. Who knows? There may be no choice at all for me come May. If one of these campaigns becomes a juggernaut, it may be all over but the shouting. I have deep concerns about, I could be a concern troll about any candidate you name me. Because there is no such thing as a perfect candidate. I have more concerns about others, about some than I do others. But the bottom line is that if you don't vote in South Carolina, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and the Super Tuesday states, you're out of luck. Other people are going to make your choices for you. This doesn't mean don't go to the polls. I'm going to the polls for the primary because there's something more than the presidency at stake. Once again, we'll have a chance here in West Virginia to throw these idiotic, godforsaken, urine-colored, snake flag-waving maggots out of office. But if primary numbers work out the way they usually do around here, there'll probably be about a 40% turnout. So at most, 20% of the voters in my county, 20% of the eligible voters in my county will make the choice, 21% will make the choice for everyone else. It's sort of like a slinky going down the stairs. It's a downward descent into political madness. The teachers in this state have had to fight tooth and toenail for the kids that they teach. And yet a bunch of those teachers will go to the fucking polls and vote for Republicans. Coal miners in this state are watching the Trump administration take away their pensions and do nothing, even though there's a bill in the Senate that would restore their pensions. They're doing nothing. And, well, their chosen one, all he would have to do is say, Mitch,
I want you to take care of those hardworking miners. They love me. I love them. Pass that fucking bill, Mitch.
And it would happen. But he won't say that. Because he despises the miners. It's a truly dysfunctional relationship. But guess what they're going to do? They'll get harangued in their churches week after week after week about the precious little fetuses. And how them Democrats is going to come and take away the machine gun you hunt fucking Bambi with. And they will go to the polls, if they go at all, and they will vote for someone to screw them even harder than they're already being screwed. They will vote for Republicans. Agnes and I are just two little votes. But there are two little votes that will be counted. And we will try to counteract two maggots somewhere in our county. But we badly need to reshape all of this. I'm going to mention again something that I came up with literally in conversation on this program. We need a one-day national primary. Now, you'll hear people say, oh, but that'll de-emphasize the rural states. What does that really mean? It means that the candidates will campaign where the people actually are? What is it that's so goddamn special about, I mean, no offense, we got members of the community in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina and Nevada. Sure. But what makes them so goddamn special that they get to make the choice for the rest of us? We need a one-day primary. And you know, that's the election day. It needs to be on a Saturday. Because remember, primaries aren't in the Constitution. The general election is, the primaries aren't. Primaries are nominating processes to find out who the party nominee will be for a given seat in the general election. We need a one-day primary, make it a Saturday in, hey, how about the first Saturday in June? And you do all your, you can still have all your early voting or your vote by mail or whatever. Right. But we have a one-day primary, and at the end of that day, we know who the nominee is. We would be far to the better for it. And there's nothing that says a candidate can't come to West Virginia or go to, what is it, Dickhole Notch in New Hampshire. They can go there. And they can go to massive population centers as well. They can go where they think they have the best chance. You have a one-day primary. The results are known by, you know, the early morning hours of the first Sunday in June. You're already getting ready for your convention anyway. It doesn't impact that. Oh, and by the way, once again, a reference to Casey Stengel asking that first Mets team, does anybody here know how to play this game? The DNC chose, and I understand why, Milwaukee for the convention in the summer of 2020. There's only one problem. Milwaukee doesn't have enough hotel space. So it's going to be a real hot mess. Read something on that the other day. That was a moment of genius. Never been to Milwaukee. I was kind of looking forward to it. Then I found out, talking to Rick Smith in Philly at Netroots Nation, that the last time he went and broadcasted from a political convention, it cost him something like $6,500. I doubt we'll be going to the convention. Yep, that's true. Brother Deacon Asa says, proof that the maggots are smarter than us sometimes. At least they know to vote in concert. Well, that's something Van Jones pointed out a long time ago. The Republicans talk about individuality and then vote collectively. Democrats talk collectively and vote independently. Trump or no Trump, this system is becoming unsustainable. It gets a little more expensive every year. A lot more expensive every year. And by the way, for those of you who think that getting the money out of politics is your issue number one, mine's climate change, but, you know, hey, we can get along. Getting money out of politics really is a big deal. Not going to do that unless we unify. And here's a nutty idea. Instead of attacking other candidates, why not try to change minds by praising yours? Why? Because the capitalist political system we have rewards attacks. It rewards candidates who give them wrestling match fodder. We've already seen it in the pageants with moderators doing everything in their power. Come on, let's you and her fight. It's a giant con. Con! Obligatory Star Trek reference. And so, we probably should start that conversation. We've started it here. If it ever gets out of here, maybe, the broader conversation will lead to positive change? I don't know. But it needs to happen. Because maybe if people felt like things like their primary vote mattered, they might be more inclined to participate. We're nearing the halfway point of the program. Otto is the only one to have answered Charlene's challenge thus far. Remember, Charlene said it needs to happen tonight. We got $185 to go. If we raise that $185, that would be for a total of $200. Charlene, we'll double it and add another $100. And that will mean fundraising free radio tomorrow and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week. I so hope we can do that. It would be magnificent. And we got about an hour and 39 minutes to get it done in. Yeah, I saw that. Flavio says, did you hear Trump forgave disabled veterans student loans by executive order? Can he do that? I honestly don't know. As with anything Trump, when I read the headline, I figure, oh, that's a lie. Because lying is what he does. It'll have strings attached. Make no mistake. Albert wants to know, what would it take to convince the U.S. Congress to have a one-day primary? It ain't for the Congress. That's the thing. It's the party's doing. If the Democratic Party said we're going to have a one-day primary and everybody's going to vote on the first Saturday in June, that's why primaries are primaries. They are run under the general principles of the Constitution, but they are not elections as such. They are nominating mechanisms, and there is a difference. But letting states that don't reliably vote Democratic choose Democratic nominees is the antithesis of good sense. Isn't it? Isn't that like... I don't know, letting Chick-fil-A set the menu at McDonald's? Thank you very kindly to Samson. Samson just jumped in and took us down to 110 to go to meet Charlene's challenge. That's tremendous, Samson. Thank you. And that bodes hopeful. So Samson and Otto have us very nearly to the halfway mark. Thank you. What else? I mean, it's not like there's a lack of information. It's a matter of what we're going to choose from amongst the madness. And of course, it being a Thursday, we've got the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to it. So we'll do that here in a sec. Oh, this is kind of a quickie. It's a week old, but it probably if it wasn't mentioned elsewhere, it needs to be mentioned. Maybe you've already heard this. Bill Barr, the prosecution, went and gave a stem winder to the biggest cop union in the United States. And he declared that there must be zero tolerance for resisting police. This will save lives. No, he really said that. We must have zero tolerance for resisting police. This will save lives. In other words, don't resist, and maybe the cops won't kill you. He said, "We, the people of the United States, need to comply first, and if warranted, complain later." Bear in mind, in the mind of Bill Barr, complaint is never warranted. Then he took a shot at prosecutors that he said are social justice reformers and soft on crime. All that happened in New Orleans. A city with an nasty history of having a vicious police force. Zero tolerance. You know, like Michael Brown. Zero tolerance. You know, like with Eric Garner. Thanks, Lady B. Thank you very kindly. We're making progress. Almost down to the halfway mark. Thank you, Lady B, so much. Huh. This is weird. I didn't know I'd gone away. Randy tells me I'm back on TuneIn Radio. Not seeing any buffering or anything. It's just, maybe it's thundering somewhere near me that I figured that out the other night. Remember we buffered up and went away for a couple of minutes? It turns out there was some thunder 40 miles away, so the Frontier interweb tubes ran under the couch and hid. Bill Barr is Opus Dei, reminds us, Flavio reminds us, you can't get more fascist than Opus Dei. Nope. So we are at the halfway point of the program. Let's check in on the Green News. I have a feeling maybe we'll be talking a little bit more about the fires burning down the Amazon. Because that needs to be talked about. Okay? Okay.
It's Thursday, August 22nd, 2019.
The agency says as of Tuesday, it had counted more than 74,000 fires.
Record wildfires from the Amazon rainforest to the Arctic North. Alaska is so warm, salmon are dying in rivers. Teen climate activist sails for New York City in a solar-powered boat. Plus,
it's become clear that I'm not going to be carrying the ball. I'm not going to be the president, so I'm withdrawing tonight from the race.
The 2020 Democratic climate change candidate drops out.
All of those disappointments and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Look, I've been fighting climate change for 25 years, mm-hmm. and I've never been so confident of the ability of America now to reach critical mass to move the ball.
Well, I'm glad you're confident, Jay Inslee. You should run for president. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, very sad news. I know he was never actually going to become president, but I think it was really important for Jay Inslee to be in the race for the Democratic nomination.
Yes, and he did succeed in driving climate change into those debates pretty much for the first time in U.S. presidential campaign history. Mm-hmm. Washington Governor Jay Inslee, the 2020 Democratic presidential candidate who made the climate crisis his primary focus and released the most comprehensive plans for solving it, did drop out of the race on Wednesday. He met the donor threshold, but not the polling threshold in time to qualify for the next round of debates hosted by the Democratic National Committee. That means that Inslee will not participate in special climate forums on CNN and MSNBC in September.
But he really did force everyone else in the race, well, not everyone, but many of the other candidates, to move forward with big climate plans. So I do think he accomplished something there. And he'd make a great EPA administrator.
Yes, he would. Meanwhile, global warming is turbocharging wildfire season around the globe, with massive fires burning in Alaska, Greenland, Siberia, and the Canary Islands. But the most alarming fires are in the Amazon rainforest in South America, where Brazil has seen a record number of fires this year. As of Tuesday, more than 74,000 blazes, an 84% increase over the same period last year. Satellites show a new fire starting every minute across the Amazon. Smoke from the fires can be seen from space. Conservation groups blame Brazil's right-wing president Jair Bolsonaro for the shocking increase in deforestation because of his deregulation and policies opening up the Amazon rainforest to more logging, mining, and cattle production. Nonprofit group Amazon Watch says farmers are explicitly telling Brazilian media that Bolsonaro has encouraged them to clear more forests.
And like Trump, Bolsonaro is a climate change denier, of course.
The Amazon rainforest generates 20% of the planet's oxygen. And as climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann noted on MSNBC, these fires are releasing even more carbon into the atmosphere, creating a self-reinforcing feedback loop that causes more warming, which in turn causes more fires.
The Amazon is supposed to be a carbon sink. It's supposed to be helping us with climate change by taking carbon out of the atmosphere. And instead, we are turning it into a source, which means we're accelerating the buildup of these greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, worsening climate change as a result of that.
In Alaska, record high temperatures for more than 50 days in a row have created tinderbox conditions with more than 2.5 million acres burning. And these rising temperatures are hammering the state's wildlife and its commercial salmon industry. That's according to Jeannie Devon, communications director for the Alaska Democratic Party, in an interview on the broadcast.
We have wildlife issues where salmon by the thousands are having heart attacks because the water is so warm that they can't make it to their spawning grounds. They don't survive. They just die in the rivers. Walruses are having problems. Polar bears are having problems. I mean, it's catastrophic.
But some good news. Scientists at the Florida Aquarium in Tampa say that they have hit upon a breakthrough, for the first time ever succeeding in getting an endangered Atlantic Ocean coral to spawn in a laboratory. That could save the state's endangered coral reefs from climate change and disease. And finally, Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg is right now crossing the Atlantic Ocean from Europe to New York City on a solar-powered zero-emissions racing ship to lead the global climate strike. Those are massive demonstrations that are scheduled around the world on September 20th and 27th to coincide with the United Nations General Assembly. The global climate strike was inspired by Thunberg's School Strike for Climate movement that has galvanized children around the world to demand that their governments act on climate change.
Do you suppose she'll have the same success in lighting a figurative fire under American politicians as she has in Europe?
One hopes.
We'll see. Travel safely, Greta. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Rock the boat, don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat, don't tip the boat over. Rock the boat, don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat.
I love that song. Okay, I told you we'd hear more about the Amazon fires. Probably the single, because I see it being mentioned, and the single greatest response is, you know, shock. But there's one gets the sense out there that people think that, you know, maybe these are wildfires. No. The fact of the matter is, and we need to get this all the way down to our toenails, the European colonization of the Western Hemisphere is not complete. 500 years on, it is not complete. There are still indigenous people in Amazonia. And because Jair Bolsonaro is as dangerous a fascist as is Donald Trump, well, he despises the indigenous people of his country as much or more than Donald Trump despises the indigenous people of this country. And he still maintains that worn-out European notion of to the victor go the spoils, and an idea of survival of the fittest that is about as racist as you can get. These fires are set fires. They're part of attempts by farmers and loggers to clear-cut the land. Christian Poirier of Amazon Watch said, "The vast majority of these fires are human-lit. The Amazon is a humid rainforest. It doesn't catch fire easily. And these farmers and these loggers, these ranchers and these predators, they see that magnificent ecology, that magnificent environment, as merely something to be exploited. Alberto Setzer of the Space Research Center for Brazil, called INPE, said fires are up 80% from last year, and that 99% of the fires that are burning in the Amazon are the result of, there's that magic word again, they're anthropogenic, human-caused. I never knew we had so much oxygen that we could do without 20% of it. And by the way, the dry season, the peak dry season in the Amazon, hasn't even arrived yet. That happens next month. One of the more interesting pieces of research that's been done in the last 20, 30 years had to do with invalidating assumptions that had been made about the indigenous people who inhabited Amazonia. For years, it had been thought that they themselves engaged in slash-and-burn agriculture, where you cut down all the trees, you burn them, the ash and carbon supposedly make the ground more fertile, and then they would farm it. Guess what? Not true. And the archaeologists, the research archaeologists who discovered this, did so by the practical application of the technology of the time. In other words, some archaeologists went out into the forest and tried to cut down a shitload of hardwoods with stone axes. It proved to be incredibly ineffective and not something that that a tribal people with limited resources would be prone to do. Instead, what they discovered, and you can read all about this in Charles C. Mann's brilliant book of many years ago, 1491, what they did is they farmed the forest itself. And they built terraces to keep land above the flood in the rainy season. They were brilliant. No, the people doing the stupid slash and burn, that's very European of them, I guess we should say. And by the way, these fires are difficult to put out, the ones that are burning now, because it's not like you've got a massive governmental response to wildfires such as we see in the desperate attempts to put out California every time it catches fire. So what do we get on social media? We get a hashtag, pray for the Amazon. Live on hay, pray and pray, day by day there will be pie in the sky when they die. Among other things, proving his Trumpiness, Jair Bolsonaro has gutted his environmental agency, the enforcement arm, by cutting out the Brazilian monetary equivalent of $23 million. Ron in Raleigh says, don't you know, according to Bolsonaro, it's the NGOs and environmentalists that are lighting all those fires. Can't trust a tree hugger. Oh, I know. Among other things, Bolsonaro says, I'm not Captain Chainsaw. And yes, yesterday, he said that nonprofit organizations who want money are setting the fires to, quote, generate negative attention against me and against the Brazilian government. How autocratic of you, Jair. Donald, whatever you want to be called. Meanwhile, Christian Poirier at Amazon Watch said, the Amazon is incredibly important for our future, for our ability to stave off the worst of climate change. This isn't hyperbole. We're looking at untold destruction, not just of the Amazon, but for our entire planet. Thank you very kindly to Renee in D.C. Thank you, Renee. We are now down below $100. We're at $95 to go to meet Charlene's challenge. Put an end to fundraising for the month of August. And we've got about an hour and 15 minutes left to do it in. Just $95. God, I hate talking about it. But $95. Surely we can do that. Going back to the Bill Barr story, our buddy Mark says, Barr's resisting arrest. No? Well, gosh, no. He stood right there in front of Nancy Pelosi and put his wrists out and said, take me away, Madam Speaker. Smartass. Not you, Mark. Barr. Darlene in Connecticut says, really, Mr. Barr? So Special Counsel Robert Mueller must have been soft on crime, too, by refusing to indict that criminal President Donald Trump. Oh, wait. That's right. Barr said he doesn't see Mueller as a real prosecutor. So does this mean that the DOJ is inherently soft on crime, too, with that bullshit directive that you can't indict a sitting president? Now, if we had a functioning Fourth Estate, then wouldn't a journalist call Barr out on his hypocrisy?
Nah.
Jesus. Man, it's crooks all the way down, isn't it? And remember, the anti-Semitic email sent out to the immigration judges and immigration workers, that anti-Semitic email, was only generated by keyword searches, and we haven't got an algorithm good enough to keep the Nazi shit out. Sorry. Thank you, Roberto. Roberto just took us down to $70. Thank you, Roberto, so very kindly. We're getting there. We're so close. And this, please. You know, I disdained, and this goes back to 2016 again in the scab picking. I disdained all the goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz, fucking DNC, goddamn neoliberal establishment shills bullshit. But when they fuck up, when they really honest to God fuck up, I'll join the chorus. And they have fucked up. Brad and Desi mentioned that J. Inslee won't be participating in the climate fora.
They're not debates, they're fora.
Ooh, that was almost Trump, wasn't it? Sorry. Today, there was a party conference in San Francisco, DNC party conference. And their resolutions committee had a little vote in front of them. They had a vote on whether to hold a climate crisis debate. A debate centered on climate. In which aspects of the climate crisis would be the only topic of discussion. Because really it is the single greatest existential threat faced by our little big-brained primate species at present. No climate, no habitable planet, no economy. No habitable planet, no health care. No habitable planet, no $15 an hour minimum wage. No habitable planet, no gun debate. You see what I mean? So they had their vote there at the DNC at their meeting in San Francisco. And it was 17-8. The committee voted 17-8 against holding a climate crisis debate. They're having a general session on Saturday. It may be brought back up. Because you see, the hidebound leadership of the DNC didn't want it. They were afraid, in the words of Huffington Post, that it could sow discord in the base and hamper the eventual nominee in the general election. Now, this is merely reporting, okay? This isn't shitting on a candidate. This is merely reporting. Joe Biden sent Simone Sanders, I presume no relation to Bernie, or Sarah Hasselbeck Sanders, who got a job at Fox today. Who's surprised? Simone Sanders stood up today and implored the committee on behalf of Joe Biden to vote down a debate on the single most critical issue facing humanity the wide world over. She described such a debate as, quote, dangerous territory in the middle of a democratic primary process. Dangerous. You know what's dangerous, Simone? A planet that won't support human life, sister. And, of course, at a campaign event in Iowa, because Iowa, earlier, Joe said, I'm all in on a climate debate, and then sent a creature to piss all over it. Meanwhile, the Sunrise Movement, a youth group, we've heard from them before, are vowing that they're going to protest at these meetings for the next day or so. They're going to try to shame the DNC. Good luck to them. So on the same day that the climate candidate gets out of the race, the DNC takes a big steamer on the notion of having a debate and making the candidates speak plainly, speak some version of the truth, depending on which candidate you get, to the American people at a climate pageant. Now, to be fair, Jay Inslee had led the call for a climate debate, but Elizabeth Warren got on board. Back in June, 64% of Democratic-leaning voters said they supported the idea of a climate debate. But a dozen candidates got on board with the idea of a climate debate. That, of course, includes Joe Biden, who sent Simone Sanders there to piss all over the idea. So we'll see how that plays out by Saturday. They tried to crash the gates, the protesters did, at the meeting, because the DNC didn't have enough guest credentials. They tried to press the pushback on the security, chanting, "Let them in, let them in." What's interesting is that DNC Executive Committee woman Christine Pelosi, yes, Nancy's daughter, had suggested that other primary debates will focus on one issue, like guns. No habitable planet, no guns. Like the economy, no habitable planet, no economy. Like national security, no habitable planet, no national security. Is it? I mean, you tell me. Is it dangerous for the Democratic candidates to address the single greatest existential threat facing humanity? I mean, maybe the geniuses at the DNC are right. Maybe. maybe we just want to fly nice and low under the radar so we won't scare the timid little economically anxious people in the Rust Belt. Because apparently they're still the key to the election, even though they're not. The youth vote is notoriously difficult to mobilize. Maybe this issue would. But we still have to worry about about Emory and Marveline and their matching Barca loungers there in busted knuckle Talibandiana. And whether they've got closely held religious beliefs about climate change and how Jesus is going to come down in his holy rolls and save us all. David in South Carolina, Stan asks, they don't get that we had 1,000-year floods of biblical proportion for 3 of the last 4 years? Well, it didn't flood where they were. And in a way, this dovetails with another story. And thank you, by the way, Darlene in Connecticut, jumping in on the challenge by Darlene being another charter member of the sorority of Leans and another original member of Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society. Thank you, Darlene, for jumping in. Charlene will be gratified to hear it. And you've just taken us down to only $20 to go to be done with fundraising for the month of August and have 6 beautiful days of fundraising-free radio. $20 to go. Thank you, Darlene. Now, this story kind of dovetails with the previous one, the climate story, in an indirect way. The noisier part of the story is the hissy being had by the white wing at the notion, the very notion, that Barack and Michelle Obama would buy a nice house. Because apparently they're trying to. Former President Barack Obama and his wife Michelle are reportedly in escrow for a $14.85 million mansion on Martha's Vineyard. Okay. I'm not all beat up about that. But the maggots are having a hissy. I know, who cares? Why? Why do we care? Well, because it gives us an idea of the fact that they're still motivated by their racism. Plain and simple. They're not upset about the gajillion dollars we the people have spent paying for golf weekends at Nitwit Nero's tacky-ass golf courses. No, they're not upset at that, though. No, not at all. But the Obamas buy a $14.85 million mansion? Yeah, they're... I imagine Flush Flimball about had a baby. The mansion belongs to the, and this month, the Obamas rented it out for their vacation there on Martha's Vineyard. The house has been kind of a dog because it's been on the market for 4 years. And I'm looking at a photo of it. It's a pretty enough place. I guess it's freaking huge. bless his heart, maybe Barack Obama can find a little corner where he can have a cigarette once in a while and not get caught. That's a joke. But like I said, it dovetails a little bit because, I don't know, if I took climate change seriously, maybe I'd not be buying a house on Martha's Vineyard, being how it's probably going to be underwater in the next 50 years. Not saying, just saying. Hey, Barack, Michelle. Come buy yourself a mountain in West Virginia. We will, you can put a big old mansion on top of that, and it'll be beachfront property by the time your grandkids are living in it. I'm sure, I've never been there. I'm sure my buddy Bo lives up in Ipswich, and is forever telling me how exquisitely beautiful it is. And I have no doubt of it. And hell, the climate crisis being what it is, in another 15 years, it may be as hot as Gulf Shores, Alabama in February. Let's see, and there it is. Thank you to Texas Tea. We are done with fundraising for the month of August. Hallelujah. Thank you, Charlene, for the challenge, and thank you everybody who responded to it, knocked it out. Thank you. We'll make it to another month. By the way, I've been filibobstering for about 2 hours now. If there's something on your mind, you're welcome to chime in. Give us a call. Stress line number, of course, 844-843-4676. And then Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Either way works fine as far as I can tell. Well, it's a nice house. Got a pool in the back. Outdoor fireplace. Beautiful. Oh, man. There could be some food porn going on in that kitchen. Yes, indeed. Enjoy it. Y'all earned it. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you for jumping in. We're 10 bucks to the good now. Thank you so much. Can we take a moment here at the top of the hour just for a little giggle? God knows we need one. So that program over on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, this where four women sit around and talk to some dude. Well, the dude in this case was Republican strategist David Avella. And David Avella, by God, he's upset. David Avella, well, damn it, America's got problems. And we need to focus, and we need to prioritize. Get the hockey puck.
California has tried to clear out their prisons, and yet every year they continue to have overcrowded prisons. And the focus ought to be on a society that follows the law, not allowing people to defecate in the streets, not allowing individuals to lay on the street, having just shot up with marijuana and having...
No, your lying ears are not lying to you. First, he went to the obligatory... If it's not... If the word Chicago comes up, there'll be something about black-on-black crime. If San Francisco comes up and the words San Francisco come out of the mouth of a white winger, you will immediately hear about the doo-doo in the streets. Tamale Lauren was pissing and moaning about poopy in the streets in San Francisco in a tweet about SFO, you know, the airport in San Francisco, which, curiously, is, you know, not really in San Francisco. But the best part was right there. So, you know, we got to focus on the law-abiding citizen, not the street poopers.
People to defecate in the streets, not allowing individuals to lay on the street, having just shot up with marijuana.
Having just shot up with marijuana. Man, that's some high-quality professional broadcasting going on there. And he does the gesture, of course. With his left hand, he points toward the inside of his right elbow. I mean, with his right hand, he gestures to the inside of his left elbow of his suit coat as if he's about to inject some marijuanas right into his veins. Man. I mean, we joke about these things, and then it comes true. He's just injected some marijuanas, and you know what happens when you inject the marijuanas? It makes you have to go and poop on the streets of San Francisco. I'm just glad Carl Malden is dead. He'd be heartbroken to see the vast sheets of poopy on the streets of San Francisco. Poor Michael Douglas played his sidekick in that 70s crime drama. And he must be grieving, Michael Douglas. Because everybody knows that when you shoot up the marijuanas, well, makes your bowels a little runny. What's funny, though, is if you ask San Franciscans, they'll say, you know, because it's happened. Matt in San Francisco has written in to say, well, I see quite a bit of San Francisco, and I have yet to see the aforementioned poopy apocalypse that the Republicans are absolutely certain is taking place there. It's because it's not there. Just as Chicago and guns is a dog whistle slur against people of color, San Francisco and poop is a slur, a dog whistle slur against that city's gay community. See how it works? Still, you got to give them credit for the anybody. And this guy's a strategist. He's a Republican strategist. He tells other Republican candidates how to get elected. Well, what you need to go out there and do. You know, you got a good Christian audience out there, son. What you need to do is go out there and talk about all the people you've seen shooting up the marijuanas and shitting in the streets in San Francisco. Ah, nothing gets them worked up down in. Down in Fraser's Bottom, West Virginia, like the poopy streets of San Francisco and the wild-eyed marijuana injecting addicts. Well, I got a cowbell for Randy in PA. He picked up the Carl Malden ball and ran with it. Don't poop at home without it. What will you do? What will you do? I'm Carl Malden. Yeah. And from the Ad Hoc Horn Research Department, this from Ron in Raleigh. The elevation of Martha's Vineyard is 311 feet above mean sea level at its highest point. Yeah, but there's a lot of, at its highest point, there's a lot of land around Martha's Vineyard that ain't. I didn't know that. Rusty says, back in the day, in the city, in those days, folks called that TV show The Straits of San Francisco. Quality. That's quality, Rusty. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got that out of the way. I'm feeling ever so much better. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. This is Erwin.
Hey, Erwin. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, it's been a long time since I called. I wasn't able to hear you for a while, so I turned on my other device. But I guess I picked up at the right time here. So, how have you been? By the way, pretty good. Or
August has been a bit of a booger. It's been one of the boogeriest months we've had in a while. What with my car getting totaled and stuff, and
I understand.
In fact, Charlene wrote in and said, "I knew the congregation would come through. You've had a tough month. It has been. We'll plod on." How about you?
There's a lot of devoted people in your. I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, I was over in Washington for the weekend with the group, and I forgot what real traffic is like until I got over. We got near Seattle and back to traffic. You know, the people here think we have traffic in our little city, but it's nothing like the Seattle area. So
yeah, it's a three bison pileup isn't quite the same, is it?
No, it's not. Yeah. It's we were all kind of glad to get out of there. Actually, you know, it's nice, pretty country, and Mount Rainier, and it was real clear and beautiful, and you know, it was a good trip, but it was just the traffic and, you know, piling up. And I guess, you know, talking to there's several people there that were from Southern California, and they said in Southern California, you could kind of predict when the traffic would be bad. But they said around Seattle, it's always bad, or it's very unpredictable when it will be bad. So it's really hard to drive there because it is so unpredictable. But being a country boy, it's nice to get back home. So, but anyway,
I always feel the same when I get back here.
Yeah, you were talking about climate change. I read recently that town that's just close to here, Bozeman, is going to be, and they figure it will be 7 degrees warmer on average in the summertime in 30 years, something like that. And I just can't imagine the changes that's going to take place here in western Montana and the forest fires that we're going to have, if there's any forest left to burn. You know, it's really scary. You know, I don't know, but so it's you know, it varies. It I guess from place to place how hot it's going to be, and the. I know I heard that, I think what Debian were saying that like New Jersey was like had warmed up the hottest in that area than any place besides Alaska. Alaska's really, really increased in temperature.
Well, 94 degrees above the Arctic Circle is kind of a clue, isn't it, Erwin?
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
I mean, did you see that story?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that's amazing. You know, we had about 98 here yesterday, but it's real cool here today. But that's really warm for here, even. You know.
Well, as I was running back and forth yesterday, dealing with what I had to deal with, the thermometer in the car said it was 97 degrees outside. And that's even hot for here.
Right. I mean,
it's not so unusual to see it say within a week or so of the summer solstice. But
yeah,
this far into August, yeah. And we'll probably have some 90 degree days in September. And then we'll get we'll get some nice extreme winter to go with it.
Right. Do you have a nice autumn there usually, or is it?
It can be.
Does it change rapidly?
No, it depends on what kind of rainfall we've had in the months preceding. And right. We've had a really dry August, so what colors we have will probably be late in arriving.
Right, yeah. You know, our weather is so screwed up. You know, this last winter, Flathead Lake, which is big lake north of us, froze for the first time since the 1990s. But we had that crazy weather last winter where the jet stream was holding in all the cold or whatever, or dipped low or whatever. But and so there's people saying, well, global warming isn't happening, you know, because it was cold last winter. You know, and it's just it's. You know, these people, they just don't get it, you know. So I'm not sure if my brother believes in global warming yet or not. He is a Trump supporter, the last I heard. He's got the same degree as I do. He's done better than I have done, you know. But he's denying global warming, well, a year ago at least. You know, and I'm just—it's just—it gets maddening. You know, someone that's educated and works in science not believing in it is just beyond me. You know, I don't know. Hate to run my brother down.
I think the only modification I would make to what you said, Irwin, is, and I do it too. So don't think I'm picking on you. I'm not. We tend to say
right. He
doesn't believe in climate change. And we're kind of playing into their hands when we use language like that. Because science is not religion. Science doesn't care whether you believe in it or not. Natural processes do not care whether you believe in them or not. They're just going to go on being and doing what they are.
Yes.
And so maybe as we think about it, and I mean, I see it all over. It's not just us. But maybe we need to make a conscious effort to replace the word believe with acknowledge. Because acknowledge contains the word knowledge.
Right.
And that's a good point. It speaks, I think, more clearly to the cognitive failure that is taking place between the ears of the maggots.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've never thought of it that way. You know, I have one time he said, "Well, it's volcanic activity," and then I did the figures and showed him the link to go to, and that it's definitely not volcanic activity. You know, it's increasing the CO2. But then about a year later, he still wasn't believing it. You know,
and that's because he's engaged in believing and not knowing. He's treating it like religion.
That's right.
And you'll,
that's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
And I think I've heard it all. For a while, it was it's the volcanoes. No. It's not the volcanoes. It's the sunspots. It's the sunspots and the volcanoes.
Okay.
Any cockamamie bullshit right. To try to evade the reality that this is what we in 150, 200 crummy little years have managed to do to the planet. Because the key words are right. Anthropogenic and acknowledge.
Yeah.
Human caused.
That's correct.
This isn't cow farts. Right. That's another one they like.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's just, but him being basically a scientist is just, it's just, you know, it just blows my mind, you know, I can't get over it. So, but my brother, I remember a long time ago before I knew what the John Birch Society was, he was bragging about the John Birch Society. So,
oh, well, okay, then we.
He's a hardcore conservative, you know. So
oh no, John has been. John Birch Society, Irwin, is not being a conservative. I'm not. I'm not trying to pick on your brother, and he's not here to defend himself. But if you're a proud John right. Bircher, you're not a conservative. You're pretty much a fascist. Because remember, the John Birch Society is the cradle of the teabaggers and the maggots.
Yeah.
You know, back before the rise of the maggots, right. When we were just talking about the rise of the teabaggers, you know, there was some research work done that demonstrated that the teabaggers were nothing more than rebranded Birchers and Klansmen.
Yeah. Okay. So there's always some racial component to it, even with the libertarians, you think, Bob, or not?
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, just remember that, for instance, one of the leading conservative rags, the National Review, has from its very genesis been a clearinghouse for white supremacist republicanism. It's inescapable. I mean, they wrote the stuff. It's there. It's to be found.
Right. Okay. I get, it's hard for me to believe that this is my brother. It's hard to accept that someone that's in your family is so extreme, you know, and I don't think I'm as extreme on the left as he is on the right, but maybe I am. I don't know.
Well, no, I don't think so, Earl, you know, because there's not really any left in this country. What constitutes a left in the rest of the world, we don't get anywhere near. Okay, what the rest of the world would look at what we think is our left, and they would see it as nothing more than their centrism, because they take it for granted that when their citizens get sick, they should be able to go to the doctor. We think that's some sort of communist right. heresy in this country, if you listen to a Republican. Chinless Mitch McConnell is beginning to get a little nervous. One gets the idea that, like that ancient Babylonian king, he sees a hand writing upon the wall, "Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin," which means I have measured you, and you've been found wanting. Mitch is worried that he's not going to have a Senate majority come January 2021, and so he's begun to piss and moan about the filibuster, because there's a bunch of Democratic candidates saying we need to get rid of the filibuster. And in the process of pissing and moaning about wanting to be able to lord it over the Senate like he did over poor Harry Reid, he said the following. Let me find it real quick. Won't take but a sec.
Sure.
No Republican has any trouble imagining the laundry list of socialist policies that 51 Senate Democrats would happily inflict on middle America in a filibuster-free Senate.
Now,
bear in mind, his Senate majority doesn't even represent a third of the voters in this country.
That's right.
Because the Senate is the most undemocratic institution in government. Every state gets two senators, regardless of population.
That's right.
And again, that was a process during
Montana
the
Montana with.
Yeah, that was a process during the Constitutional Convention to make sure that the slavers had as loud a voice with their relatively tiny populations as did the non-slave states.
That's right, yeah.
If you sit down and study the Constitution, you'll be shocked to find out the number of things in there that were driven by racism.
Yeah, I've heard that argument before, and when it's pointed out, it's very clear, but, you know, you take it for granted that it's some kind of sacred document that, you know, the gods made it or something or whatever. Or you would hope it would be, but it isn't, of course. But, yeah, so you talk about the slave states where actually wanted the Electoral College, but you've got these Western states now. They want to keep it, too, because, you know, there's no slavery here. Well, there was a little bit at times, but the conservatives here want to keep the Electoral College, too, because they want to keep control. And so it's not just the southern states. It's a lot of, like these North Dakota and Montana, Wyoming, the Republicans in this area want to keep it, too. So I know I've dealt with some of them. You know, some of them say that they're independents, but they all want to keep it because, you know, and then I had remarked that it's probably not fair that, like, California and Montana has the same amount of senators. And then they says, well, that's the way it is, and I just assume not have anybody else in Montana. And then I say, well, you know, California has a lot of people for probably one reason, is it's a good place to live and everything, you know. And they says, well, that's good. They can stay there. You know, it's kind of an isolationist type of attitude here with a lot of people, you know, unfortunately. You see that in Trump himself, you know, isolationist. And yeah, I think you can kind of see it in the area here in the West too.
But, well, there's
that's my opinion on that.
No, there's a special brand of crazy that infects the American West that doesn't affect states east of the Mississippi, and that's not me making a jerk or anything. It's just that there's a sort of notion that still persists that we're still settling the West and that the government has no business maintaining public lands, you know, hence the radical uprising against Bears Ears National Monument and Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah, the desire to run for the notion that somehow freedom is inhibited if some asshole with a four-wheeler doesn't get to destroy 10,000-year petroglyphs in an arroyo somewhere in Utah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's the feeling of liberty. They want, they're against rules if they, you know, depending on the rule, though. You know?
Right. They're against anything, rules unless the rules benefit them. But they damn sure want that jackbooted federal government to come in and make sure that they get their water. But they don't want government owning land. I mean, it's actually a Republican article of faith now that the federal government has no business, ought not be allowed to hold lands in trust for the public. You know, we the people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My brother-in-law, he's a Republican, and he grazes cattle on the BLM. And he's, you know, in very, very low grazing rates, and he still all he can do is complain about how the government's trying to jerk him around. You know, and he's got all this land that he pays hardly anything to graze in the summertime, but yet he complains.
Well,
about
sure,
it.
At least he pays them.
And
consider what was his name, Cloven Bundy. That guy flat ripped off We the People and deadbeated on his on his bills for his grazing. At least your brother writes the check, apparently.
Yeah. That was like $1 million, I think, he owed or something.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That. It was just a great, you know, outrage. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people like him around in the West. It's some, you know, ranchers are like that. They think they, well, if their family homesteaded a place, they cling to the place as long as they can. And, but you know, when there's like government land involved, like the Forest Service or BLM, they kind of claim that too, you know, if it's been in the family a while,
and
it's not their land.
Right. And they'll sit at the dinner table and they'll pray to God and say, "Thank you, Lord, for these blessings upon us, and save us, dear Jesus, from the socialism so we can keep grazing our cattle for damn near free on government land." Oblivious. Howlingly oblivious to the fact that they are socialist welfare queens of the highest order.
That's right. Yeah, they are. The ecologists or the environmentalists are a dirty word, and there's still there's an ongoing struggle here in the West with the logging, how a lot of it has gone away. I think a lot of it's just pure economics and mismanagement of the forest more than anything. But of course they blame the government and the environmentalists for everything, of course. But a lot of the good trees were taken out early, you know, and what's left is hard to get to and not economical. So, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. But it's always the environmentalist is always the boogeyman in these people's minds, you know.
Believe me, I know that up close and personal from having been shrieked at and threatened and such by the coal people here. Tree huggers.
Yeah. Tree huggers, yeah.
And they did the same to the people opposing a massive disastrous mine up in northern Wisconsin. Bunch of tree huggers. We're all gonna have $100 an hour jobs from them damn tree huggers.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. So, of course, I don't know if you recall the spotted owl thing. It was that was a long time ago.
Spotted owls, snail darters.
Yeah. So.
Damn government!
They don't realize that everything's connected.
No, they don't. They don't realize that they live downwind and downstream. We all do.
That's right. Your mountaintop removal is just terrible. I hope you can get something done on that. You know,
well, we're trying, and we keep pushing.
Worth the bother. It's just terrible. I don't know. It bothers me. I have family in West Virginia too, and I think about some of them. They're probably dying from whatever too.
Depending on where they are, if they're not in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone, They're in the fracking sacrifice zone. The fracrifice zone, if you will.
Okay.
Because, right. we're fracking the bejesus out of this state.
Okay. How deep do they drill for that? Is that just kind of surface type fracking?
No. They go real deep, but they're also lateral wells. So they're not necessarily going straight down. It's slant drilling. And then of course we also have dumps, landfills that accept radioactive fracking waste from other states.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
And I suppose that goes into the groundwater.
Sure it does.
Yeah.
And that's that's on top of years and decades of coal companies injecting their liquid mine waste into abandoned mine shafts. And that goes into the groundwater supply.
I don't know if you ever heard of Butte, Montana, the big copper mine here.
Oh, yeah.
That was supposed to be the biggest hole in the world or whatever. It's about half full of groundwater now, but it's so acidic. It's...
Uh-oh. Are you there, Irwin? I have a feeling Irwin's battery died. But I know the acid mine drainage. Poisonous as hell. Good to hear from Irwin. Oh, and I need to send out some extra thank yous. Because, once again, I wasn't getting all of my notifications via email. So this is the thank you list for this evening. Thank you to Elizabeth and Texas T and Kat in Ohio. Thank you to Silent R. Lamar. Thank you to Darlene, to Roberto, Renee, Lady B, Samson, and Otto. And thank you to our anonymous friend for the, I was told later, it was actually a have a family leave day on me, not have a show on me. So thank you, anonymous friend of the program. Thank you, one and all. I hate the fact that I lost Irwin that way, but sometimes these things happen. We'll pick up the conversation at another time. So lines are open, both of them, if you want to get into the conversation on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. It is certainly proven thorny. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype or the stress line, which, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And another one of the limitations I've found, and Scott helped me suss this out a couple of nights ago, I don't fully understand why, and in fact, I dropped a note to John Fox to see if he could maybe look into it. You would think that if you were connected via Bluetooth to one device and USB to the computer and to a smartphone by another device, you would think they would be able to hear each other. But apparently there is not full duplex on these channels. So that means that, like, when we do Friday on the Front Porch, where before we had the stress line in place via the gizmo box, and the stress line could hear the Skype group and vice versa, that's not the case now. So we're working on these things. And, of course, in the list of thank yous for the evening, thanks as well and foremost to Charlene in Rhode Island for getting it all started with her You've Had a Rough August challenge. Thank you, Charlene, and thank you to all of you who responded to her challenge. What else is out there? Well, since it transpired that we've had the King of Israel comment, Jesus, can you imagine if Barack Obama had, yeah, we can play that game, can't we? Well, it would we probably need to check in with Rick Wiles. Rick Wiles has been working the anti-Semitic corner, having realized that for his tax-free Dodge, there's some real money in it. If you can get the Nazis to reach into their pockets and support your anti-Semitism, your anti-Semitic version of Christianity, which is it's what he is. Well, in the immortal words of the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, that's big dollar. And so Rick Wiles, far from being shamed of his vicious anti-Semitism, he doubles down. He wears his little cross lapel pin and stares into the camera and says things that really, well, sounded a lot more, I don't know, I guess authentic in the original German. Jesus. Oh, and by the way, it occurred to me, the Greenland thing, it was Monday night, or Tuesday night. It was Tuesday night when, toward the end of the program, I mentioned the breaking news that Julius Geezer had cut off, had canceled a trip to Denmark because he felt slighted because the Prime Minister of Denmark said, well, Greenland's not for sale. And then he went on to piss and moan about how unfair it is that Denmark won't. If I was a citizen of Greenland, I would be incensed at the idea of being press ganged into being an American. One day you've got health care because you're a Dane, a dignified retirement because you're a Dane, and you wake up the next morning, the stars and stripes are flying, and it's all fucking gone. Not a lot of people in Greenland, but there's enough to take to the streets over that. And they probably would. We just want Greenland. You know, if he'd just say, you replace Greenland with Sudetenland, and there you are. And Rick Wiles is standing by to help out.
You people in the government, you're liars. You're sick liars. And you think that we're stupid. You think that we're dumb. We know that you're
No, I know that you're a vicious anti-Semite, racist, bigot, neo-Nazi, fascist. But do continue.
There is something very evil going on in this country. There are kill teams.
Death squads.
Death squad kill teams moving throughout America, killing, slaughtering innocent Americans. And there's an agenda.
Now, hold on. We had a slaughter in Gilroy, California. We had a slaughter in El Paso, Texas. We had a slaughter in Dayton, Ohio. And in between those, there's various and sundry murders taking place left and right. And here's this pig talking about kill teams in America. Wait till you find out who the El Paso shooter and the Dayton shooter and the Gilroy shooter actually were.
And I have named it Ergen. And I am risking my life saying it's Ergun. I-R-G-U-N.
Which is not pronounced Ergun. It's Irgun. And the Irgun were the terrorists who attacked civilians, killed anybody that felt like needed killing back around 1948. Menachem Begin, for instance. Later Prime Minister of Israel, was a member of the Irgun. the implication is obvious and dangerous. And he gets to hide behind the skirts of the First Amendment and say this filth.
Ergen, the country's being taken over. I'm telling you that Ergen did it. Yes. Run with that story, right wing watch. Put it out there. Rick Wiles said Ergen has killed teams in America.
He really gets upset about right wing watch because right wing watch does run with this shit and does shine a light on what a goddamn Nazi he is. And then, of course, Rick Wiles sends out a fundraising letter saying, well, they're trying to shut me down. I'm telling you the truth. There are Ergen kill teams in America.
Wow. Go for it. We're at the end of this country. They're slaughtering innocent people on a Saturday afternoon shopping at Walmart.
I guess I actually feel like I need to make this clear. He is saying that Patrick Cruzius, the young white male from an affluent suburb of Dallas, Texas, whose mama called the police because she was worried about her son having a gun he had no business with, Rick Wiles is claiming that he really didn't do it. Or that if he did really do it, he did it at the behest of the Jews. We really can't get much more clear about the growing Nazi threat in this country. And I keep saying it and saying it. And sometimes I feel like a lone voice crying in the wilderness. We have a bigger fascist Nazi problem in this country than most people will dare to suspect.
My God, what's it take to get the American people to wake up and defend themselves? To our Palestinian friends, to all of our Arab friends, Ergen is in America. The same terrorists that took the Arab lands in 1948, they're here in America killing us.
I wonder how many checks he cashes written on Russian money. Because that right there is an attempt to foment the same kind of bloody, vicious conflict that Mother Russia loves to sow around the world. This country largely does not have a problem between its Muslim and Jewish communities. In many instances, mosques and synagogues can be found engaging in ecumenical efforts toward peace. But Rick Wiles doesn't want that. Rick Wiles wants the blood to run in the streets. And that's why he claims that the kid who shot up Lucky Ned Peppers, or the crowd outside it in Dayton, was secretly a Jew. Guess what? In the 1920s and the 1930s, all of this happened in Germany. And there were good Christians, just like Rick Wiles, saying these same filthy things.
I'm risking my life saying this. If something happens to me, know who did it. I'm risking my life making these statements.
No, you're not. You're risking getting listed as an anti-Semitic hate monger. But that's only because of what you say, Rick. The Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism keeps a list of the anti-Semitic channels that gets hosted on YouTube. This shit goes out day in and day out. This vile septic tank sewer cesspit of hatred and bile continues to exist on YouTube. And our buddy John Britovo gets banned, gets put in the corner for 3 months because he ran somebody else's goddamned audio. Gives you a pretty good idea, doesn't it, of where Google and YouTube think their interests lie. And what they care about. A guy trying to add to the civic discourse in this country gets suspended, but under the guise of free speech, this putrid, pernicious hate goes out at will. Jesus. Now, one last thing. Of course, that side of the street is not in complete agreement as to what causes these mass shootings, except to the extent that they are not caused by white people with easy access to guns, filled with rage and hatred that has been fueled by the sitting president of the United States. On that, they all agree. Rick Wiles thinks that the Ergun, sounds like somebody mispronouncing Oregon. Ergun squads are out there running across the land. I guess they're doing it to promote the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion or something like that. But that's not necessarily the case, according to E.W. Jackson, who, when last we checked in with him, was spending a great deal of time thinking about big, muscular, hunky men.
The left has got to stop this racial, racist demagoguery, trying to paint the president as a racist, trying to paint anybody who is against illegal immigration as a racist.
You know what would stop, the so-called left from referring to people as racist? If racists stopped being racist.
And trying to suggest all white people are racist. And the
nobody suggests that. What we suggest is that racists are racist.
Problem in our country is the white man. Folks, I don't know that I've heard anything so diabolical, so sick, since I used to hear that the black man was the problem and that the black man was a violent, racist, irresponsible, murderous person. Now we're hearing...
And just one quickie. 12-year-old Tamir Rice was shot dead in a matter of seconds by police in Cleveland because they thought 12-year-old Tamir Rice was a black, full-grown man. Just a gentle reminder.
No. It wasn't a black man after all. It's the white man. And folks, both of those are just as evil and wicked as it gets. And let me say this to all you leftists out there. And
you know, I don't think he really needs to talk to the leftists. What left? Huh. Maybe he needs to say that to Rick Wiles. Wouldn't that be like a steel cage death match to see maybe him reacting to the clip of Rick Wiles that I just played? Wouldn't that be interesting? Yeah, because he wouldn't criticize Rick Wiles. Maybe if the check was big enough, because that's what determines the morality of these maniacs. And just one last thing on the way out the door. A long time ago, now, Dr. Bill had David K. Johnston come and speak in Beckley to the attendees of the grant program he was administering. And back then, Trump wasn't even a blip on the radar. But David K. Johnston has been following Trump for most of his adult career. So I got to meet David K. Johnston. We had some nice conversations. CNN booked David K. Johnston a couple of days yesterday. You know, he's got a Pulitzer, David K. Johnston does. And so Kate Baldwin interviewed him. And she said, David, you've studied Trump for years. You've also called him a world-class narcissist. How does that play into everything we're hearing from the president today, from the I'm the chosen one to I'm the second coming of God, to declaring the Danish leader can't talk like that against the president of the United States? David K. Johnston replied, Donald really does believe that he's superior to the rest of us. He has himself talked about how the Trumps believe they're genetically superior to the rest of us. Notice how he calls everybody who in any way doesn't bow down to him an idiot, a fool, they don't know what they're doing. You know, if Donald were not the president, if he were someone you sat down next to in a bar or at a dinner you had to go to or in an airplane, you would within a matter of minutes conclude from listening to this guy that he's a blowhard who's crazy. And here's the pull quote. But Donald really does believe these things. And they're delusional. And they're indicative of the fact that our 45th president is deeply mentally ill. Given how common mental illness is, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised that at some point we're going to have a mentally ill president. It's what we've got now. Now, that was said out loud on CNN on Wednesday, the 21st day of August, 2019. Here's the funny part. If you've been listening to this program for the last few years, that came as no surprise to you. Because you already know it. You know it because you listen to this program. You know it because we have deconstructed him at great length. But the difference between that interview and what we do here is that they had to go to break. So you can't take the next step and say, well, what do you do about a mentally ill president? And you sooner or later, even if you do, you still got to go to another commercial. But by virtue of being part of this community, you know that there are remedies. We have probably spent more time on the 25th Amendment here than any other broadcast in this country, I dare say. Analyzing it, parsing it, literally word by word, and sometimes punctuation marks. You know, for instance, that being knucking futs isn't grounds for impeachment. You know that being unable to discharge the duties of the office by virtue of severe and debilitating mental illness is the province of the 25th Amendment. You know that. The CNN audience didn't. So, again, thank you to Charlene and everyone who responded to her. Thank you to our Have a Family Leave Day on Me anonymous contributor. We get to put this information out there for discussion because you all keep this going. Thank you. On behalf of the entire community, thank you. We're going to have a fundraising free Friday on the front porch tomorrow. We will have two fundraising free Fridays on the front porch in the month of August. How awesome is that? Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years now at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.